Hey, welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. We're also recording this episode as a video, so you can catch it on YouTube. Our guest today is Tressa Yelig. I've been struggling to say her name correctly. And she is a real expert on fermented foods and broth and the Western A. Price type diet. She's a wonderful local resource, and I'm really happy to bring her onto the show today. So first of all, welcome, Tressa.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I was just looking at your website. You've got kind of a rich history, how you got into all this. Do you kind of want to give a little nutshell about your background and what you've been up to in the last few years here in Portland?
Sure. The quick version, I guess, is that I started out in cooking, wanting to work with people that had chronic illness. But at the time, the only philosophies that were really understood for folks dealing with any kind of illness issue were things that were related to vegan, raw, vegetarian, macrobiotic, or Ayurvedic diets, all of which are excellent therapeutic diets, some of which I found a little troublesome long-term lifestyle-wise. But that was where I discovered fermented foods. Actually, it was a fermented sodas class that really got me, and it just blew my mind that you could create effervescence naturally, that that wasn't something completely synthetic or industrially created, that this was actually a traditional old world food. Fermentation has been with us forever, creating flavors and textures and all kinds of amazing, really synesthetic experiences. And I was just thrilled. Plus, then getting more into some of the other, like you said, Weston A. Price style foods, it felt more like immediate medicine. You know, some of these other diets, you know, they may or may not have an immediate effect. You know, people, I think, have lost touch with the way that food immediately relates to how they feel, or the consequences of their food decisions immediately affecting their health. So to give people a positive experience that they would immediately recognize with food was something that I was really fascinated by. So I got involved with some folks that were starting a community-supported kitchen down in the East Bay called Three Stone Hearth. And I got to really see how that worked on a broader community scale, working with farmers and farmers markets and seasonality and all kinds of chefs. And of course, I was still fairly ego-driven as a chef and wanting more fancy restaurant experience, and ended up working in a series of restaurants in California, which was great experientially. You know, got really into the molecular gastronomy scene and got to learn a lot, and also got to learn that I didn't like a lot of that restaurant scene and actually got very sick myself. And so when I was sort of taken by I had a septic MRSA infection.
Wow.
Not a small thing. And immediately I was, you know, I was hospitalized for a week trying to find an antibiotic that would work. It was devastating. And the food in the hospital, I can't even talk about, was terrible. And they thought I was going to need this surgery to guarantee that I'd be protected from this kind of infection ever again. And turns out, in between leaving California to go and get this surgery, I kind of got to get more involved in my own food passions. I had nothing else to do. And these were things that I knew just made me feel good, and I just needed some comfort at the time. So I got back into fermenting and bone broth and some of these style of foods, and by the time I got to talk to the ortho surgeon, he was, you know, what infection? What surgery? We don't even need to do this. There's no problem here. And it was really a revelation, because then I got to say, well, I don't have to spend the next 4 months in recovery, and I don't have to spend all this money on surgery. What do I want to do with my life? And that's how I ended up out here. I just kept thinking, why aren't people making this resource available? Because so many people come to it when they're sick, and that's when they have the least amount of energy to put into making these lifestyle changes and starting over on a whole new food paradigm that was completely foreign to them. So I kept thinking I wanted to help create a resource for those people as a bridge. And that's how Salt, Fire, and Thyme began. And I just wanted to live in the Pacific Northwest, so that's how I ended up out here. You know, in the last few years, it's been interesting because Portland is not Berkeley. And it's a completely different community of people that are educated in a completely different way, that engage their life in a completely different way, and their food culture is much more social here. So we started out under the brand of a community-supported kitchen with the idea that we'd have a changing menu weekly and people could choose a la carte what they wanted and come into the kitchen to pick up. And we were doing classes and dinners weekly with speakers and running a volunteer program. And that wasn't really working. So then we consolidated and became more of a CSA program for prepared foods in this style. But even so, at that time, you couldn't give a lot of this away. People were still really wrestling with the idea of fermented foods, organ meats, saturated fats, bone broth. Those things were all very, very foreign to Portlanders. Or the ones that were familiar were already doing it themselves. So we did that for a while until it basically turned into a product line because folks became very attached to certain preparations and they just wanted to receive those. So then we really consolidated what the product line is, and that's what it's become today. I still do a lot of teaching and cooking on the sides, and sometimes we'll do the occasional dinner, and I do a lot of collaborations, which is wonderful. But it's gotten a lot simpler. But the thing we've missed since we made that change to a product line is an experience, a really community-driven experience for these people. And that became really evident last year when we tried to add delivery. It tanked. Nobody was into delivery, even though we were offering it free. We still do, but it's amazing to me how many people don't take advantage of that. And I realized it's because so many of them are already isolated by what they're dealing with that they come to us for an experience of community. And I really wanted to dress up the way we gave that to them and also try to reach out to those busy professionals that can't make time for community but still want to participate in this kind of food culture. So
okay. That's awesome. And I really admire your entrepreneurial spirit because you've stuck with it. You know, you kind of had this idea and you didn't know how to get people to connect with it in every way that you hoped for. And you've just kind of paid attention to what people want and what people need and are curious about it. And you've kept at it. So that's so awesome. We're going to talk to more about it later, but tell us more about your new venture that you said just broke ground.
Right. Broth Bar has been a sparkle in my eye for a long time. It's really exciting. You know, there's been a few people in the States that have tried to sell broth by the cup, bone broth by the cup, and this will be the first one in Portland. And the idea being it's a coffee shop that just serves up broth or other really great foods in this style of eating where the ingredients are well-sourced, the preparations are all traditional, and they're very delicious and accessible, but we wanted to make it easy. So that experience I was talking about is really what this new space will be. And that's why we chose to give it a different name too. An outlet for people to come that don't otherwise have a place to gather that is non-alcoholic and has really wonderful choices and is family friendly and where community can gather. But it's the piece that's missing from our product line, that community piece, that people piece, a place for folks to gather and people to engage before they commit. It's a way for folks, like I was saying earlier, to participate in this movement without having to really take it home. So it makes it more accessible. And then when folks want to start taking on the responsibility of making their own foods this way, they can. You know, this is not rocket science. I didn't invent it. I just want to make it easy where people can participate.
I think that's a good point. There has to be a bridge. I've told a lot of people about bone broth. And I could probably count on like one hand or one finger how many people have made it starts me telling them about it. It doesn't really work. I mean, hopefully I have a little video and I made a video with a local chef. So, you know, hopefully it's happening, but I think that it's just it's not really part of our modern lives. So it is a pretty big jump to say like, oh, I'm going to make bone broth or I'm going to make sauerkraut or kombucha. And also, you know, we're often busy. You know, I should have mentioned earlier, I took a making sauerkraut class from you that was fabulous. And I made sauerkraut a few times, but to be honest, I still also buy it. We can buy great sauerkraut here in town. And sometimes I'm just like, I want to eat this way, but I also kind of just need things to be easy or social, like you said. So I think it's great you're mixing it up and offering other resources. So cool. So you said earlier that you found these foods that had an immediate effect on health. I thought that was really fascinating. So tell us more about what foods you offer and craft in your product line and some of the immediate effects on health you've seen.
Sure. Well, our four main ones are our beef jerkies. We do a really beautiful coconut yogurt, our line of kombuchas, and then our line of bone broths. And outside of that, we bring back little preparations and small batches that used to be part of the menu, and we had a really broad menu. So occasionally we'll do our beautiful three oil mayonnaise with raw eggs, or we'll do our lamb burgers with organ meats, or we'll do a batch of our lacto-fermented sodas or our beet kvass, or you know, things of that nature. And now they're special and they're easy to bring back in. We did a lot of fermented ketchups and things like that, which are fun to play with those preparations. I mean, when we were really trying to consolidate our inventory, it was just harder to make them available all the time. But I actually think now that we'll have Broth Bar and a place where people can really participate a little bit more socially, the convenience of bringing some of those back will be easier to share. But what I love about these foods and their immediacy, for instance, you'd never expect it, but our coconut yogurt is a very special product because we put a lot of energy into sourcing coconut that's imported without being irradiated. So it's organic, but also not irradiated during its transport. And then we take just that coconut meat and we puree it, we culture it, we add a little bit of vanilla specks to it. And the texture, because coconut's a natural emulsifier, is very much like a pudding. But unlike a lot of other coconut yogurts on the market that are full of emulsifiers or that are just the cream and kind of overload you on the fat and then people have trouble digesting it, this is more a blend of the fat and the protein. And it's just a really beautiful, beautiful perfumey product, not expecting that it would be easier to swallow. And so what's interesting about that is here's a way for us to get a really beautiful food into people that would otherwise have difficulty swallowing, who don't want to manage texture, who aren't used to things that they can manage swallowing because of texture also being delicious, specifically folks on chemo. And so that product has been a lifesaver for a lot of folks that going through that process are having a hard time keeping food down, that don't want to think about how their body's going to digest it because they're just so hungry. And in a place where you really just want to feed your body and not feed the cancer, that's a product that allows us to do that. Or the bone broths obviously speak for themselves. People have such a profound experience with the bone broths. I think so many of them come in expecting it to just be like a Campbell's soup, and then they have their first cup of bone broth and they're immediately calmer, or they immediately feel comforted or held. And there's it can be extremely moving for people to have a momentary relief from whatever digestive distress they've been going through. And so the bone broth offers people that experience in a way that they haven't, it's totally unlike anything they've ever had before. The kombucha is another one that I think blows people's minds a little bit, especially when you have one like ours that's a little younger, it's more mild, it's not as effervescent, but it has very sophisticated flavors. So one thing I love about our kombucha, especially for people that are used to being on a lot of pharmaceuticals, it can help clear that mental fog that they experience. And so waking up where they'd normally put in a cup of coffee or they need something to help, you know, get out of the fuzz of whatever they either are recovering from, their liver's going through, who knows. But the point is they have a glass of kombucha and it gives them a lift, but it also clears the fog. And so here's a moment of clarity that they wouldn't have otherwise had, or that they would have taken another pill to clear. And so it's giving people these tools to help themselves. It's incredibly empowering. But what I love about it the most is that then they start paying attention to the sort of physiological consequences of what goes in their body. So now we've created a visceral memory of, you know, cause and effect. So they begin to start paying attention to other things, like having a glass of water when they have a headache instead of immediately reaching for the Advil, or when they're looking at their plate of food, thinking, okay, there's a lot of spices here. How is my body going to react? Do I need an extra enzyme before I eat this or afterwards? Not just reaching for the Pepto, but thinking proactively or preemptively before they begin a meal, because now they know that they can tie how they will feel later that day and the following morning to what they had for dinner. And I think it's just creating those patterns. It's creating a little trail of crumbs for people to start following, and then they begin to re-embody themselves.
Mm. Yeah, when you were talking about how you feel clearer on certain foods, it made me realize, you know, I consume a lot of these foods. I have a pretty healthy diet at this point, but sometimes I still eat things that are not healthy, right? You know, I go to a party or I just whatever, think, oh, I'll just have it, and then I feel so bad. You know, I get a headache or my gut is killing me. But I guess a lot of people are operating on that all the time. You know, they're just kind of eating processed food all the time, and they think, oh, this is just how I feel. I feel bad. But when you add in foods that are healthy, I guess I just didn't think about the fact that when I eat healthy foods, I feel good. I just feel like when I eat healthy foods, I feel, you know, normal and I'm functioning correctly. But it is, you know, it is that's giving me that normal, healthy function. And if some people have never had the experience of eating traditional foods or eating homemade foods, then yeah, it probably is a really immediate boost to their health.
It's life changing. It's like a bulb went off, you know, just amazing to watch them. And then watch how their curiosity builds once they have a positive experience, that moment of relief. Because they're so normalized to their discomfort that they doesn't appear that there are options for anything else. So give them an opportunity to experience something positive, to have a little moment of relief. Now they want to know everything. Now they want to understand the whys and hows, but not the other way around. We definitely learned that early on. When I try to sell a class on like blood sugar balance, nobody shows up. But if we talk about, you know, fermented fun fizzy sodas you can make at home, then we want to talk about blood sugar balance. Now they're into it, but not before.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, I mean, a part of the business of being in health is like, how do we sell it to people? How do we make it fun and appealing? And I think food is a great way because everyone loves delicious flavors. A lot of people are willing to try new things too. So, you know, go into the broth bar for the first time is probably something novel, and then maybe they'll start to get into it and research more. Yeah, really cool. So people listening or watching may still not have tried too much fermented food. You know, maybe they see the kombucha at Whole Foods, or, you know, they're hearing more talk about it. Tell us some of the health benefits of these fermented foods.
Well, I think of fermented foods mostly as pre-digested, which I know sounds really gross, but I think people misunderstand or underestimate just how much energy their body spends on digestion. And so when things are not traditionally prepared, your body has to work twice, three times as hard to get something to the stage where it can begin to break it down and then absorb nutrition. And so, you know, just because there are micronutrients in a food doesn't necessarily mean that we get access to that our body can break it down in a form that it uses, and then that we actually get nourished by that food, which is why there's so many, you know, digestive problems out there these days. We've been ignoring that process for a long time, and our digestive systems are just pooped. No pun intended. Anyway, the tricky thing about that is fermented foods are like a helping hand. They're using wild bacteria, wild yeast, things that occur all around us that we're already participating in, and mixing these different little microbes together in a way that begins the digestive process for us and starts breaking down those foods in a way that then when we go to eat them, our body doesn't have to work as hard to access that nutrition. And so we get a lot farther in those foods. We get a lot more out of them. And besides the fact that there's so many secondary benefits, immune boosting, energetically, if the body's not spending all of that energy digesting, it can put the extra energy into healing. It can put the extra energy just into whatever you want to put extra energy into. You know, maybe that's skating or your children or painting or who knows what, but you know, there's more room in our lives than we give ourselves access to. And so that's where I think fermented foods can be extremely liberating. The hardest part about fermented foods is the first step. It's like getting over your fear, the bacterial phobia, getting beyond the idea that you and bacteria are on opposite sides of the room fighting for space, when really we're exactly the same. They want to live in our space. They live all around us, inside of us, on every surface. They participate in our lives more than we do. And so when you start thinking about adding them or giving them freedom to access our foods, it's kind of where they should have always been. We've just been fighting a very natural process for a long time. So we restore our bodies by giving bacteria in our environment access to our food before we eat it. We make ourselves less foreign in our own environment. We become more familiar, and our bodies really respond quickly to that.
Yeah, and you say, we're fighting this natural thing, but for what, like thousands of years, we were cultivating these fermented foods. It's probably only been, what, like 60 years or something that we have not been cultivating them, right? Now we're starting again, thankfully. So it's good to know that, these are really traditional foods. And, I actually just got one of my clients to start having sauerkraut. I said, make sure you buy it raw and that kind of thing. And she said, "Oh, it's really delicious," because she had only had the kind that was like, pasteurized in like the jar by the relish or whatever. So I think that's could be a barrier too, thinking that you won't like the taste, or you don't like the taste. Even maybe your first time you have sauerkraut, you'll still think, "Oh, it's a little funny," or "It's a little too sour," or whatever. But you do, I think, and you've probably seen this, quickly develop a taste for it once you kind of get used to it. Would you agree with that?
Totally agree with that. I mean, it's interesting how I think different organs crave different flavors. And when our bodies are responding naturally, those become things that are just immediately delicious to us. So people that wouldn't normally be into sour things, I hear that a lot. "Well, I don't like sour things. I'm a sweet person." But then once their bodies really start responding well, suddenly there's a switch that flips in their brain that starts saying, "Oh my goodness, this is really delicious. I can't imagine a meal without it. Now it seems like a wonderful combination." Two foods, you miss it when you don't have it. So there are flavors that come up in fermentation that you can't create otherwise. They just cannot occur. And so it's a really interesting place to just sort of step outside your comfort zone and find out that you actually like a lot more flavors than you ever had access to before. So it begins with a dare, but it sustains, be it like via regular, what's the word I want? It's reinforced constantly by our taste buds when our organs are talking to our taste buds about what they want. It's instinctive eating, you know?
A lot of times when I talk to my clients about having fermented foods, they say, "Oh, well, I eat yogurt," and so that, it's the first response I always get. And so I think, well, I say, well, it's pretty processed food to buy a store-bought Yoplait. It's probably got a lot of junk added. Even if it doesn't have any flavor added, it's still pasteurized. You might not tolerate the cow protein and this and that. So I started to have that conversation about there's other fermented foods, and you mentioned the coconut kefir, is that right? Or yogurt, which I totally want to try. Can you just talk about like the whole array of fermented foods out there so people kind of realize what the options are?
Sure. It's amazing how much more is out there than I think people realize, how much they're already participating in a lot of fermented foods. I mean, bread is a ferment. Yogurt, kefir are obvious ferments. Beer, wine, pickles are all ferments. Miso. Then you start getting into some of the more exotic ones. When you look at, even every steak, every bit of jerky, these are actually ferments. We're allowing them to age, let access to air and wild bacteria begin to break down those meats to create some of the amazing flavors that we consider to be the most prized in the meat industry. Grains, oats. I think what's the big manufacturer of oats? I forget that until, gosh, I think
Quaker
it's
Oats.
yes, 30 years ago. That's the one everyone thinks of. They actually told people to soak their oats overnight before you cook them. When they made their, oops, sorry, cat. When they made their quick oats, all they did was remove that soak before label to just say, "Hey, it'll save you time, but does it save digestion?" It doesn't actually save you time in the digestive process. So other foods that people think of, sorry, my cat.
Oh, it's adorable. Just let the cat walk around.
No, things that are getting more popular now that people are more familiar besides sauerkraut. Every culture has them. Sour Reuben is another one. Trying to think of others. Pickled fish, lox. What is something else? Natto is a weird one because most ferments are lactic acid ferments. They're acid ferments. And natto is uniquely alkaline. It actually is pretty amazing, but you have to really make it well to have it not come out like stinky feet. But when you make it well, it's got hints of cocoa and it's sweet and it's just the most beautiful thing. And it's, you know, got a pretty unique texture, but just amazing. I'm trying to think other things. You can culture anything. That's what I think is phenomenal. You can ferment any food. You can use fermentation to make every food you're eating more digestible. There's no limit to it. And I feel like when people get into fermentation, myself included, we all end up going down the rabbit hole for a while where you're kind of like, I'm just going to ferment my whole world. And now you're actually seeing a lot more things like people including probiotics in cosmetics and topically, which I think is going to be such a relief and counter to all of these antibacterial lotions and sprays and soaps. Why not populate our skin and our surfaces with good bacteria? Crowd out so the bad ones instead of just trying to destroy everything. It makes a much more pleasant and effortless situation to just work collaboratively with bacteria.
Well, the statistic, like there's 100 times more bacteria in us and on us than our human cells. True. Something like so that. True. It's something phenomenal. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen some probiotic skin stuff. Is it Dr. Ohira who has this? Is a Japanese researcher who's come up with some different probiotic products. So I've checked those out a little bit. So yeah, you've got kind of, you're talking about some advanced moves, fermenting all sorts of things, and some beginning moves, which is just buying things or going to a local shop. Can you tell us a bunch of resources, perhaps locally with you, and I don't know if you ship or not, and then say someone's listening and they're in a different country, like what are some ways people can start to get involved, whether it's websites, books, you know, things at the grocery store?
Well, in the States, I think, you know, the obvious quick places to go for really good probiotics are usually, like you were saying, looking for companies that source clean vegetables that are doing traditional ferments, and usually they are, as long as they're not pasteurizing their products. And it's good to look for that. You know, fermented foods are alive. They continue to act on themselves and digest themselves and participate in the environment around them. So they do need a little tending. They're kind of like pets in that way, and they do continue to ferment. So what I think is interesting about them in that way is that at no point are they necessarily dangerous, but they do become unpalatable. So locally, grocery stores, sauerkraut, yogurt, there are a lot of good brands. There are a lot of amazing companies in town. We're so lucky to have miso makers and people making tempeh and all kinds of other ferments here, natto. If you're looking online or you're wanting for resources to start making things at home, Cultures for Health is an amazing resource. They have every culture under the sun and lots of starters. That's a really great place to begin. Videos, books. You know, Sandor Katz is kind of the godfather of fermentation. His first book, Wild Fermentation, is really based on a dare. I don't actually encourage people that are beginners to start there. His second book, The Art of Fermentation, is much more for hand-holding and supporting people in their, troubleshooting and walking them through their fears. To guarantee them that they're getting a safe product. Because there are definitely bacteria to watch out for, but good bacteria will always crowd out the bad. So I do think overseas, you know, in Europe, there's a lot more access to traditional ferments. And mostly it's just starting to ask your neighbors. I think it's amazing how many people are culturing and making cultured foods, but they don't talk about it because they assume it's weird or too culturally specific or otherwise unwanted. But these are the longevity diamonds in our, you know, cultural ancestry. They're worth sharing. And people, I don't think, value it because they've gotten so familiar with it. You know, grandma's been making this. I had no idea it was special, you know. But they miss those flavors. They are nostalgically delicious. So
yeah, that's a good point. I like your point about, you know, talking about it. I think when I was a little younger, I'd be like, oh, I'm that weird health person. But now I'm like, try this. Well, you know, like just have fun. Just joke about it. Have fun about it. You know, if people taste it and they think it's gross or make a face, just laugh about it. It doesn't have to be a big thing. You know, food is about trying new things. And I think actually, Tress, I first learned about you from Rylan Feeney, who we had on the show once. And I was in a nutrition class of hers, and she was saying in the adult phase of life, which is a pretty long phase, one of the most important things we need to do is have variety. If we get stuck eating the same things all the time, it's putting our health at risk. So trying new things is really important. How about your own website and your own business? What can we only access you locally or?
No, absolutely. We still offer delivery.
That truck is just waiting.
We do ship. We ship all over the States. We've actually even shipped overseas, which is amazing. And all of that information is on the website. It's easier for people to just go through the website, but they can always just email us for questions. And we have a lot of good bulk bundles that offer discounted pricing for people that really get committed and into it. So, and that's just Salt, Fire, and Time. And is spelled out A-N-D, and Time is T-I-M-E. Saltfireandtime.com, and everything is there.
Okay, and I'm on your newsletter. Will you let people know as you get Broth Bar going and have your first events?
The newsletter is the best way to follow us. Broth Bar is on Instagram and Twitter. Saltfire and Time also has a Facebook, and the newsletter goes out maybe once a month. But Facebook is really the one that I think, Facebook and Instagram, that get updated the most frequently with sales or promotions or special events and classes. The newsletter is a great way to stay in touch, though, too.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and you're just sharing your passion. You're still so passionate. All these ups and downs you've been through. So great. And I will definitely be celebrating with you at the opening of your new place. And now I'm going to have to go by your production facility and get some yogurt. When are you guys open to pick up?
We're open right now, Wednesday to Friday, 11 to 7, and Saturdays 10 to 2.
Okay. Yeah.
Broth Bar will have a whole different set of hours I haven't decided on yet.
Okay. I'm running some errands this Saturday, so I just might come by and get that coconut yogurt. All right. Well, thanks to you. Thanks to our listeners, and hope you can tune in next week. You know, I record the shows. I'm not always sure what order I'll put them out in, but we have just such an amazing variety of shows on all sorts of topics. So we hope you subscribe, whether to our YouTube channel or to in your iTunes or your podcast, so you can keep getting the info just delivered right to you. If you'd like more information on me, I'm at bridgetdanner.com, and I always put everything in the show notes and the YouTube notes so you can find out about some things we talked about. All right. Thanks, everyone. Until next time. Bye-bye. Be well.